You guys like coffee?
Yes.
I actually cannot function without it.
Luckily for us, we have an advertiser, Passion House Coffee Roasters. Passion House was founded by a longtime fan in Chicago, and they've been sourcing and roasting some of the best beans in the world since 2011.
Now they need your help naming a new coffee, an experimental micro lot from a renowned farm in Colombia. With coffees named Millie Grace, LSD, and Box of Rain, the bar is high for a new name. But we know you can help.
Go to passionhousecoffee.com/Osiris to read about the mystery coffee and submit your idea for the coffee name. While you're there, pick up some beans or cans of cold brew. I had the Passion Cat cold brew cans recently, and they're great. Our listeners get 30% off their coffee, so enter Osiris at checkout. Get after it.
Hi friends, welcome to the Helping Friendly Podcast. This is the quick hit for the second night of Bonnaroo, which was June 16th, 2019. And we have our guest David, who was on the first quick hit from Bonnaroo 2 days previously. So thanks for being back, man. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me back.
Great, great. So you're on your way home, right, from the middle of Tennessee? Yeah.
Middle of Tennessee, back home to the real world.
So. Nice. How you feeling? You a little bit exhausted? Euphoric still? Anything?
A little bit of both. I mean, I'm definitely tired, and it's you know, anytime you leave tour and go back to, you know, out of the wilderness, as I call it, back into the real world, it's always a little bit of an adjustment. But I'm looking forward to getting back to things. I mean, tour in general recharges me. You know, you can just release some things. I haven't seen the band since last October, I guess. You know, and I've been planning tour since January, so it's always good when it comes and it starts off. I'm going to Alpine Valley to close out the tour. I've never been to Alpine Valley, so this was a little appetizer, and I'm looking forward to a few more shows next month.
Awesome. Yeah, the Alpine Valley, have been a couple shows, and it's worth the trip, and it's all the hype is true, so it's exciting to hear.
I've been wanting to check it off the list for a long time, so I'm glad to get to do it.
Were these your first shows of the you didn't go to St. Louis, did you?
I didn't. I was actually supposed to go to St. Louis because my friends who works in Nashville, who kind of had the hookup for us for this weekend, wasn't supposed to be able to go to Bonnaroo because of a family emergency, or not emergency, but a family trip. And so I planned to go to the St. Louis shows. And then about 2 months ago, his family camping thing fell through, and he said, we're going. So I had to bail on my friends to St. Louis.
Yeah.
But I think I made the right call.
Yeah. I mean, that's an incredible weekend. I've never been to Bonnaroo. I know when you spoke with Matt, a couple of days ago, that he hadn't been for about 15 years. Was this this was your first trip, right? Wasn't it?
It was my first trip.
Nice.
You know, it is really a sight to behold, what they do there. And just a quick shout out to all the people at AC Entertainment and Superfly and, Jesse and Brian and all their teams. It really is quite a thing to pull off in the middle of nowhere. Because we had artist passes and kind of guest day parking, our entrance into the festival was a little bit different. But we got to kind of see some of the back of house, you know, behind the scenes a little bit. You're driving in and you just see rows and rows of campers that are there for the staff, and then they're, you know, these big, almost like catering tents, and in there are people sleeping in tents, and you know, just pallets of water everywhere, and golf carts and tractors, and so it's really a huge thing to pull off anywhere, But to pull it off in the middle of nowhere is quite impressive. And again, just a shout out. Every staff person was amazing. Every volunteer, every security guard. People are in a good mood. And I think then the people at the festival are in a great mood. Everybody was just very kind of happy and chill all weekend. So it was a really good environment. Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about your Saturday experience, the fishless day. Was it fun? Did you spend the whole day there, or any notable acts?
We didn't spend the whole day there. We took it easy a little bit. One of my friends actually had his wife and 7-year-old come down from Nashville, so we went to the festival with them and took it in through their eyes. So we went over in the afternoon and we saw Maren Morris, who was actually really good. She was on the main stage.
Cool.
And then when we wandered around some, and then we caught a little bit of Casey Musgraves, mm-hmm. which was also really good. That was probably the most exploring I did of the festival grounds was during that day. Cause again, we were wandering around, and just the people watching is amazing. Sure. It was Pride Day. They were kind of celebrating Pride. So there was a lot of rainbow stuff, going on. And, it's interesting, you know, you see all these, everybody was like dressed up basically, you know, there were a lot of costumes and outfits and things.
Right.
And then you see all those people, and all those people are singing along to every Casey Musgraves song. So, you know, it's like people who are dressed for a rave, but then they're singing along to this Nashville, and like semi-country artists. So that's a little disconcerting.
Right, but a nice meld, probably.
A nice meld, definitely. And yeah. So we kind of hung out, and then we headed out. We didn't check out. Again, we had a kid with us, and we were a little tired from the late night fish set Friday night.
Sure.
and wanting to save up for the big fish night last night.
So perfect. Let's lead into then the show last night, yeah. Which was two sets instead of one, like Friday night. But
right.
They came on about 8:30-ish local time. Is that right?
Yep.
How was the weather? I know it's kind of a lame question, but you raved about the weather on Friday. Did it stick to being nice?
It stuck to being very nice, and actually it warmed up some on Sunday. So I didn't. We thought we might get a little rain, and we didn't. But it actually warmed up to a pleasant condition. I mean, on both Friday and Saturday, I had a long sleeve kind of shirt, you know, layer Patagonia thing that I took with me that I had to wear during the show Friday night.
Chilly enough.
It was chilly enough. I mean, it was almost cold. And I went on Thursday night as well before the action kind of started, and I was cold that night. So last night was great. It was probably, you know, in the low 80s, leading up to showtime, and then in the 70s. So,
I have to say that I saw on the webcast, the free webcast, which we got to thank the band for that and whoever put all that on, I thought it went on, went off pretty flawlessly for us on the couch. But, I saw some beads of sweat on Paige's forehead during the first set and Trey too,
yeah.
Especially after he was climbing around, which I thought was pretty hilarious.
It was really interesting seeing him be a lot more mobile. We were noting that I'm not sure when the last time he's had a wireless setup on his car.
Probably, at least October, right? The Casfot box.
Definitely that. And I don't know if that's what spurred it or anything, but it was fun to watch him kind of go out into the middle of the crowd and stand up on that gearbox.
Sure, I'm sure.
I forget what it was during.
Yeah, it was the first, definitely the first few songs, Blaze On probably, I think, is when he was climbing over there, which was funny to watch him ramble his way up there or whatever. It was really funny to watch. But exciting.
When he climbed back off, I was just like, don't fall, Trey.
Yeah, I know. Same thing. Yeah. Oh man. But that I think it kind of lends to him watching Cardi B earlier, as that's a, you know, very active set that she puts on. There was pictures on Instagram, his Instagram specifically, of him, you know, standing side stage watching her perform. He was obviously moved by that moving performance. So
yeah,
that had to have led to it, along with the Childish Gambino, which you talked about, the show on Friday before him, before Fish.
Yeah,
for sure. So cool, man. So tell me a little bit, just kind of generally about the first set. There's a little chatter online that I don't know if you've seen it, but the Rebo is really well played. A lot of people think that, but generally the songs were kind of short and to the point.
Yeah, I mean, overall it was a great set. You know, I had no kind of musical expectations coming into this weekend. You know, I was coming for the experience, and the fact that my favorite band was going to be there was a bonus. You know, I'm chasing Esther and Lifeboy. I didn't think that I would get any of those songs this weekend. So it was a really just well-played Fish show, and the first set was well-played. You know, the Blaze On was really good. It definitely, you know, had a little extra mustard on it. They were having some fun during the Death Don't Hurt Very Long. You know, Fishman just screaming. The Reba was great, but yeah, the Reba was short. The Reba, I think, was 10 minutes. And I'm not sure how much cracked the 10 or 11 minute barrier
right
in the first set, which is, again, which is fine. I wasn't expecting, you know, it's like when they were playing the Baker's Dozen and they opened the second set every night and it didn't matter what they played, they took it for a 20 minute
right
ride. You knew you weren't going to get that tonight. And, you know, the band builds off the energy of the people who were there and the situation. And the truth of the matter is that this is not a Fish show. This was a festival that Fish was headlining.
Right.
So the whole experience is different than when you're at Merriweather on a Sunday night and the people who were there are hardcore Fish fans and they're there to see a Sunday night Fish show.
How was that? Yeah. You know, you're talking a little bit about maybe the crowd was going to be smaller on Sunday night just because of the timing. Was the stage the same? Just kind of details about that.
The stage was the same, and it didn't seem like, and again, it was hard to judge from where I was, but it didn't seem like that it had cleared out that much. I mean, I'm sure that there were some people that left, but it was plenty packed in, and I tried to pay a little more attention to the crowd. I definitely saw a few more, you know, Fish shirts. You know, is this still Lawn Boy? I also just looked around to see, you know, a lot of people singing along to a lot of songs,
sure,
which makes me think that it's you know, and whether it's hardcore Fish fans or people who were just able to check them out because they're around that area or they go to Monterey every year and this is their time, they're going to get to see Fish. But people were definitely into it. It was packed in.
Good. That's good to hear. I'm glad that it wasn't like dwindling or whatever. It was funny too. I don't know if you caught it, but after Blaze On, I believe Trey asked if everyone was still ready and or if they were tired or whatever he said, and you could tell he was pumped up. But then they played Death Don't Hurt Very Long, which is kind of funny. But that was cool to hear. I thought the Free Into the Sand was another highlight. The Wolfman's again wasn't very long, but
right,
really solid first set, as you mentioned, right? No complaints.
Yeah.
Nothing really.
No complaints at all. I mean, my friend who I was with did go to St. Louis, so he had a couple of just overall. He saw a lot of stuff in St. Louis that he then saw again this weekend.
Yep.
But you know, again, you can't kind of complain about that. And Cavern even had a minor Trey vocal flub, which is somewhat, you know, it's sometimes if you don't get a Trey messing up Cavern, you feel like you haven't really heard Cavern. So
Mike screwed something up too, which he rarely screws up vocals, and I forget what it is now, but I remember watching on the webcast, and that was pretty funny. They were focused in the I thought the plane was really tight, and everyone was having fun, but it maybe as a result they didn't focus as much on the lyrics or whatever. I don't know, but what about the second set? How was the set break? Was a good 15 minutes as always, and
15 minutes.
Right.
Step break was great, and again, you know, it's interesting. I mean, it really kind of clears out. People can head out and go up into the Centeroo and, you know, kind of disperse as they as they need to, and then come back to where they are. I was calling mics kind of from before the show. I felt like we were definitely going to get a mics last night.
Nice.
And so it was nice that they opened up with it.
They listened to you.
Pretty
yeah.
Basic. Yeah, it's good when the band listens. And it was a pretty, rocking mics, a lot of energy. And then, to go into Fluffhead was really special. If I read correctly, that's the first time they've ever done mics Fluffhead ever.
Yeah, I think people were talking about that. I didn't look into it, but definitely mentioned on the Fish Twitter too. So,
well, I think Biz Archive said it, so I trust him. So I trust
yes.
Scott when he said.
Yeah. Oh, if he said it, then yeah, no questioning.
Yeah.
So I was kind of surprised that Mike's was kind of short because it was the first, song in the second set, but it was 7.5 or so minutes long. And the Fluffhead
right.
was almost 15. That's pretty standard, I think.
Yeah. Right.
And then the Twist, I thought, I love Twist, and it's kind of a divisive song, but I love it. And it kind of slowed things down. It kind of maybe was a little breather for them as the jam kind of got a little bit dark and a little bit slow.
Yeah, and I think Twist was probably the jam of the night.
Nice.
It definitely probably went the most interesting places and not just Type 1
mm-hmm.
machine gun. And there were definitely some moments where Chris, I think, was helping to drive some of those changes. The one thing I'll say that wasn't frustrating, it was just visually not what I'm used to at a show, is because we were back by the soundboard and the big video screens really are distracting.
Sure.
It's great because you can really see up close, and I was able to get some facial expressions of some of the stuff going on, but in terms of what I'm usually used to, which is kind of letting Kuroda paint the band as they play, it was hard to really get that full effect when you've got two giant video screens. But the lights were amazing all weekend. And then especially during Twist, he was doing a couple of things that I think, you know, those times when Chris will start to do something and the band follows Chris. I think that
right.
was definitely happening during Twist. Yeah.
Right. That's great. And I agree with you. And I can, the small screens are kind of fun, like the ones at an outdoor venue that are on the top of the pavilion, where if you're up on the lawn, but when they're right next to them, yeah, I agree. But at the same time,
it's a big space. I understand
yeah.
why they did it. I mean, it
yeah.
is a big stage they were on. There are a lot of people, when there are 40 or 50,000 people in the audience, you have to do that. So
sure,
I get it.
Sure. The other thing I was going to mention is that Trey was dancing, or he was doing his little dad dance, quite a bit last night, while he was rocking, which it was fun to watch. And maybe people further back got to see that on those screens. So a little bit of benefit
yeah.
there, but so, then there was that, I mean, we didn't talk about it yet, but the Twist turned into a Twist sandwich with Weakapog and No Man, in the middle there. That was pretty fun, but kind of anticky maybe. I mean, nothing was over 4 minutes within those jams.
Yeah, it was a little kind of some set list shtick, so to speak. I mean, they started the Weakapog, and then right after the Weakapog, I think they just kind of found themselves in No Man's Land, which
sure.
is fine.
Yeah,
I don't know how
naturally.
Long.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I don't know how long they jammed out No Man's Land necessarily.
Yeah, right.
What I didn't necessarily need, it was great to go back into the Weakapog because they didn't really finish the Weakapog. I don't know if they needed to then come back to the Twist,
mm-hmm.
Woo,
mm-hmm.
At that point. But,
right.
you know.
Everybody's got a woo, but especially Trey.
Yeah. Well, the band's going to do what the band's going to do. So
the only thing that I thought was highlighted or should be highlighted from that Twist is Trey's raw, kind of dirty, gritty sound that he's got with that Twist, for example, during the Twist, is just great. I think it's really sounds wonderful. He's got
yeah.
it really dialed in right now. So, but it goes into a Fuego, which, for me is just kind of there. It wasn't even 9 minutes. Wasn't jammed really.
Yeah, that was kind of the one. That was the one little Father's Day shout out for
yeah.
the dads in the crowd. Was the freak out and throw stuff. World's greatest dad.
yeah.
But yeah, and again, Fuego is one of those songs where, when they open a second set with Fuego, I've seen them take it out, 20,
sure.
23 minutes.
Totally.
But they just kind of played it and then petered off with it.
So, for the record, that it was during Fuego that Mike was kind of, he booted a lyric or two, but, you know, whatever.
Okay.
No big deal. I'm just being picky. Ghost, yeah. Ghost is a top song for me. However, you know, Trey's been playing it a lot lately, especially with Tab and Fish generally that plays it more than they used to, or maybe the same, I don't know, but it seems like it gets a lot of rotation now. And when it's 9 minutes or less, you know, maybe it doesn't stick out. I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, I think so. And again, you know, when it's not a jammy vehicle, I actually was lucky enough to see both of the Tab shows at the Tabernacle.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
And I have to say that the Ghost that closed out that second Trey show was better than the Ghost I saw last night. Just in terms of kind of meaning,
sure,
and placement and energy. You know, Trey, when he finished that Ghost at the Tabernacle, it was one of those things that he could barely breathe. You know, you could tell that he was tired.
Sure. I hear you. And the bathtub gym that closed, 12-minute bathtub, kind of a unique spot to close the second set with it. But it's a, you know, again, a top song for me. So what'd you guys think?
Yeah, and it was very well played, and it was a lot of high energy, and they kept kind of taking it up and peaking it over and over again. So it was hard to argue with that. You know, the crowd got into the, you know, we're all in this together, we love to take a bath,
right?
Type
even though
stuff.
Nobody had probably bathed, at least the Gen Pop, right? Yeah,
right. Yeah,
they all needed a bath for sure. So. Tell me about the encore. Everybody's kind of running on fumes, especially those who have camped. I mean, I can only imagine now that, well, especially now that I'm an old guy, but even in the younger days, it was hard to, you know, 3 days worth of a festival sleeping in a tent. But they brought some energy, Wilson and First Tube.
Yeah, you know, it was interesting. I mean, like, especially in the middle of the second set, I kept looking at my watch thinking, God, they've got so much time left. I really was wondering if at some point in the second set they might, you know, everybody was wondering if we were going to get some sort of special guest at some point.
Yeah.
When it didn't happen in the first set, you kind of wonder, well, it's probably not going to happen.
Sure.
I thought we might get a Fishman tune at some point in the second set, you know, just to kind of break things up.
Mm-hmm.
And again, for maybe the people who haven't, you know, who don't see Fish a lot, to expose that silly side, and here's our drummer in a dress playing a vacuum cleaner.
sure.
But we didn't get that. But
they withheld.
Yeah, Wilson is always great. My wife is actually named Wilson, so whenever I hear Wilson, I think of her. And the encore, it was somewhat appropriate. It was like, oh yeah, I've got a life to go back to.
Oh man, yeah, reality sets in. Sure,
reality. And then the First Tube was great. I mean, again, and my buddy who was in St. Louis was a little grumpy because he was like, I just heard First Tube.
Sure.
And again, I think we both were like, you know, the First Tube we saw at the Tabernacle was almost in a way, and it's hard. It's hard to compare the Tabernacle to Bonnaroo because in the Tabernacle it's so intimate, you're right on top of the band, and in Bonnaroo it's so big.
Yeah.
But First Tube is just a great. First Tube is a great closer.
Yeah, he knows it. Trey knows it. Yeah.
Trey knows it. It gets everybody dancing. He was running around the stage.
Yep.
He gets to do the Jedi guitar thing at the end, which everybody likes. So,
sure.
I mean, double encore, First Tube, send everybody off with smiles.
That's great. That's great. So what, tell me though, like, was that it? Did they turn the lights on in the whole place after that? Or like,
they turned the lights on after that. And it was weird because it was about 11:45, I think, or 11:50. So,
and no other stages were going?
I don't think any other stages were going at that point. Now, I don't really understand because I didn't spend that much time out in the kind of Gen Pop area.
Yeah.
I don't know if Center Route closes, but there are these things called the plazas. And so I think that maybe some people kind of retreat back to some of those areas.
Gotcha.
I don't know if they keep the party going. I don't know if people pack up and, you know, leave.
Sure.
But yeah, no, they turned the lights on and that was it.
Cool. Cool. So overall, you're glad you went, and it was a good but long weekend. Is that accurate, David?
Yeah, I'm very glad I went. Cool. I'm not sure that I would ever go again, especially if Fish weren't playing.
Sure.
But I've always wanted to see it. Again, I've never, you know, my last festival was Coventry, which was just a disaster.
And so
to be at a festival and just be around that collective energy of all of those people. And again, because we had a little bit of a different access, just to be able to see some of the stuff that goes into it, it's really impressive. And I think that Bronnaroo kind of came back this year. I think they've had some years that have been down just in terms of attendance. I don't I think that there have been some years where they sell maybe 50,000 tickets or 55,000 tickets. And, you know, so to come back this year and to sell 80,000 tickets and to sell it out.
Nice.
And I don't think that's because Phish was playing.
No, they had. They had a great millennial lineup, right? With Post Malone.
They moved it. I thought some of the people I was talking to, they moved it where it was not conflicting with CMA Festival, which happens Nashville the weekend before. So they moved the weekend, and that kind of freed up some of the resources. I think the ability to do some of the packages from Nashville and all this stuff. But like you said, they've got a great lineup. So, I mean, good for the festival. They're able to sell out. And, you know, it is interesting to think about that Bonnaroo started with Trey and Widespread Panic and all of these jam bands. And it's now a place that you could go and see Post Malone or U2 or,
Cardi B.
Cardi B and Maren Morris and Lumineers and the Avett Brothers. It's a really cool thing, and I'm grateful to have been a part of it.
And by the way, I mentioned Trey checking out Cardi B. Bob Crawford, the drummer from the Avett Brothers, said that he was checking out their set too, which is cool.
So Trey was
getting around, checking things out, which is fun.
Good.
So, David, I appreciate it, man. I know you're on the road. I hope you're driving safely home and had a good time. I got a few more things to wrap up before we wrap up, which is number one, the Helping Friendly podcast. HF Pod is going to do a little get together with Osiris the Saturday of the Camden shows. It's from 1 to 3. All that info is like on, I've got a baby with me too. All that info is on Osiris's Twitter and HF Pod's Twitter and all those things. So check that out, you guys, please. And secondly, we're going to run a little ad, but the music clip will be after that. And Dave, this is where you come in. What do you want to hear for the music clip or the jam clip?
I think for the music clip, let's see, probably the Twist, I would think.
Nice.
Was the deepest thing they did last night. So.
We'll do it. Yeah. So that's the third song, the second set. We'll throw a little clip in there from that. And again, David, thanks. I appreciate all the time you took for us and hope everybody enjoyed it. And we'll see you on the road sometime, hopefully.
Yeah, happy to do it. Take care.
Thanks, man. Bye-bye.
Nugs.net is the destination for live music on demand. They have a growing collection of over 15,000 full-length concert recordings from bands like Pearl Jam, Humphreys McGee, Dead & Company, and Bruce Springsteen and the E Street Band. So you'll never run out of live music to explore.
I've been digging into a lot of Humphreys shows on Nugs.net, and the catalog and the sound quality are really amazing. It's a great way to get to know a band even more.
I've been listening to a lot of Billy Strings, Dead & Company. Oh, and Wilco's on there now, too.
Well, I've been listening to the infamous String Dusters and loving some of the old Steve Kimmock shows on there.
It's available on desktop, iOS, and Android apps. Sonos, that's how I listen, and BlueOS. The Nugs.net team knows you love live music, so they're offering new subscribers a 35% discount on an annual subscription. Go to nugs.net/helpingfriendly and sign up today.
If you already have a subscription, give the gift of live music to a friend. Again, that's nugs.net/helpingfriendly for 35% off an annual subscription.